This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading healthcare policy organizations in the country. Regular listeners will know that she's been with us every major step of the way through this healthcare reform debate, and it will even continue as the fight continues well after the legislation's been signed. And Grace Marie, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's a pleasure to be with you, Greg, and it's not over yet.
We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment, but one of the things, of course, that happened this week, in addition to the president signing the original bill that the Senate passed and the House passed after much rancorous debate on Sunday night, was this fixes bill that passed through reconciliation. The House passed it moments after the original bill. The Senate passed it on Thursday, and they had to make a couple of very minor changes, and the House approved it again on Thursday night. So now the reconciliation is law. One of the things people don't know, though, is probably what is exactly in this thing. What was the focal point of the so-called fixes bill?
Well, one of the things that, you know, when Nancy Pelosi was asked, could you pass the Senate bill through the House, she said, absolutely not. There are not the votes there. Because there had been such public outrage over the Cornhusker kickback, the Louisiana Purchase, the Gatorade, all the other pork in the bill that Senator Reid put in there in order to buy the 60 votes he needed to get this through. And they said there's no way that after hearing the outrage among the American people that they could pass that. Well, that was their only route to enactment of Obamacare, because they couldn't get another big bill back through the Senate to do the normal constitutional process of coming through a conference committee. So they basically passed the Senate bill in the House, and then the Senate had to promise, we'll take all this stuff out that you don't hate. But in the process, they put in a lot of new subsidies that required at least another $100 billion and probably more of tax increases, another $100 billion in Medicare cuts in order to pay for all of this additional pork, and having a federal control now of the whole student loan market. So it was not a small bill. It was a major, major bill. It was debated for 10 minutes on the House of the floor yesterday. It was just absolutely outrageous, and it was it's doubling down on Obamacare. This is serious. It takes away companies' ability to operate in the ERISA umbrella, huge new taxes on investment income, putting Medicare taxes on investment income, not to shore up the Medicare program, but to create this new entitlement. So I think it makes a bad bill very much worse.
How big was the hike on the investment tax, Grace Marie?
I'll have to look at the numbers, but you know they needed at least $100 billion more, and you know who knows how much it's going to be. They have fake numbers in there of what they expect this to bring in, but we all know that tax policy is very dynamic. If you cut taxes, you get more revenue. If you increase taxes, you get less. So however much they think they're going to get from this, it's not going to be enough. And you can bet that when the president's new deficit commission makes its report on December 1, that they are absolutely going to say, you know, it's turning out that all these new tax increases, this half a trillion plus in tax increases, isn't going to be enough, so we need more taxes. And it's going to be chasing the train. We're never going to catch up.
Grace Marie, you also mentioned that one of the reasons Nancy Pelosi didn't think the House could pass the Senate version of the bill without the fixes is because of the sweetheart deals, the Cornhusker kickback, Louisiana Purchase, among others. How many of those actually got taken out?
Well, not all of them got taken out. I mean, they left the Louisiana Purchase in because Senator Landrieu said she wouldn't vote for it if they didn't leave that in. So, and you know, we're only beginning. I've read through this, but you have to study it because you can't understand all the gobbledygook legislation because they refer to one law that's passed and they change now provisions in a previous law. So you have to really put all this together to understand what they've done. And with now almost 2,900 pages of legislation, that's almost impossible to figure out. It's certainly impossible to figure out how to get it right. And we already see this, you know, just in the first literally hours after this is passed, oops, we made a mistake in saying that children could be added to their parents' policies immediately if they have pre-existing conditions. that didn't really make it. We didn't draft that the right way. And oops, we're going to wind up having a $14 billion hit on companies like Caterpillar and John Deere, valued manufacturers, because of a provision involving retiree coverage. Oops, 2,000 people, 2 million seniors may lose their retiree health coverage because of this provision. They're just, it's an infinite number of unintended consequences that are going to come as a result of this legislation, hurrying it through, poorly drafted in many ways, and incomprehensible in many others.
Grace Marie, as I'm sure you know, the president is hitting the campaign trail, for lack of a better term, in order to sell the bill ex post facto here. And he started that process in Iowa. And he kind of made light of the concerns that you and others have had for this legislation, saying that this would be Armageddon. He says when he signed the bill, he expected asteroids to be coming through the White House because the world was coming to an end, and basically saying that all that fear was not justified. When do you expect some of the impact of this to become very real? You already mentioned how it will be for some firms and for seniors, and but for the bulk of the population, how will they see this materialize?
Well, I think the very first thing we're going to see, members of Congress are heading home right now, and they're going to be doing town hall meetings over the Easter break. I think that they're going to be facing powder kegs because people are just exploding with anger. CNN recently did a poll this week saying that 62% of Americans want Republicans to continue their fight to repeal this thing. It was passed in opposition with the American people. They're going to start to feel the impact of tax increases right now. It's very, very insidious, because how do you know about the job that wasn't created because the small business owner was afraid of the obligations that he would be taking on by bringing on new employees in light of huge obligations for health insurance coverage that he's going to have to provide? I mean, there are so many insidious ways that this is going to harm our economy. But if we have a double-dip recession, I think that we're going to be able to say Obamacare has put a huge, huge cloud over the economic recovery with these new taxes, the new regulatory threats, and we're going to start to see many more doctors leaving the practice of medicine. Business Week has a story about that already today. It's going to be very difficult to track when you're talking about 1/6 of the economy, but I think you're going to start to see the real decline. And we have a conference yesterday too about the incredible innovation we expect from our health sector. Well, what investor is going to put money in a risky new medical technology or drug when they realize that some bureaucrat may just arbitrarily be able to say, well, you can't introduce that because we think we just have enough of those on the market now. Thank you very much.
Grace Marie, real quickly, about 30 seconds or so left here. You mentioned the doctors and how they might be getting out. What will be the factors? What will start to be happening to their bottom line, or other regulations from the government that will just have them throw up their hands and quit?
Well, look, at the law will give some primary care physicians a slightly bigger payment, but that's not what these doctors are in the business of $2 or $3 more per patient. They want to be able to practice medicine, and we're going to start to see government dictates. There's a new organization, the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, that's going to start to dictate to doctors how they can practice medicine. I saw a bunch of them this week. I spoke at a conference of doctors for patient care, and they were saying, you know, if government's going to tell us how to practice medicine, we're out of here. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that to our patients. We can't ethically not make the best decisions that we know for our patients.
Certainly not a rosy picture. We'll keep track of it. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.